We find ourselves this evening in the book of Acts and chapter 13, if you'll turn there with me. Acts and the 13th chapter. We're in the midst here of a sermon of the Apostle Paul. And he's doing here much the same thing that Peter had done back in Acts chapter 2 and again in chapter 3, making the point for Jesus being the resurrected Son of God by whom all of us have been blessed by his sacrifice. And as was the case in Acts 2 with Peter, so Paul also goes back to the Old Testament for prophecies fulfilled, and especially the one concerning David. And we pick up in the sermon this evening, reading together, in verse number 33. Acts 13, beginning at verse 33. God has fulfilled this for us, their children, in that he has raised up Jesus, as it is also written in the second Psalm, "You are my son, today I have begotten you." And he raised him from the dead, no more to return to corruption. He has spoken thus, "I will give you the sure mercies of David." Therefore, he also says in another psalm, "You will not allow your Holy One to see corruption." For David, after he had served his own generation by the will of God, fell asleep, was buried with his fathers, and saw corruption. But he whom God raised up saw no corruption. And we'll stop there for now, because there's a phrase here in the text we just read which is easy to overlook. And it's not the most important phrase or point that comes out of this sermon by any means. But it is highly significant, not just for David, but for us. Notice the language again, one more time in verse 36, where it is said of David, he had served his own generation by the will of God. There is a lot there. Served his own generation. And what I'm about to say, you're going to think, we already knew that. You're not telling us anything we don't know. But I may encourage you to think in a way you hadn't thought before about this, and perhaps yourself. I think it stands to reason, we'd all agree, that David had nothing to do with building an ark back in the days of Noah. And if I were to ask you, why wasn't David more involved in the building of that ark? You'd say, well, Brother Keith, that's a nonsensical, non-starter of a question. He wasn't alive at the time that Noah built the ark. So, of course, he had nothing to do with it. And I would say, if you told me that, I'd say, that's a good point you just made there. I should have thought of that. He wasn't alive back in the days of Noah and the flood. And so I say, well, I've got a different question for you then. How come David was not more involved in the New Testament church than the New Testament? I read about Peter and Paul and James and John and Jude, but I don't read one word about David. Where was he when the church was beginning? And you'd say, Brother Key, still, you're not getting the point. He wasn't alive during that time. And I'd say, you know, you've got me again. He wasn't. And then if I were to ask you, when did David do the works that he did? You'd say, well, again, it's just common sense. He did the works he did while he was alive to do them. He couldn't be involved in works before he was born, and he wasn't involved in those works following his death. As great a king as David was, as soon as he expired, and Solomon was selected and put into power to take his place, no one could say to Solomon, you can't do that because your father would have done differently. No, Solomon spoke for himself. And David no longer was king. His time of serving, for good or bad, was over when he left this life. And so Paul frames this idea by saying he served his own generation. Well, again, we take that for granted. We've just shown the fact that he could serve no other generation than his own. But what was true of David is just as true for you and for me. You know, why weren't you more involved back in the Civil War with releasing the slaves? Well, you say, I didn't live back then. What do you plan to do 100 years for the mess this world might be in then? Well, I can't do anything. I won't be around to do it. When are you involved in those things you can do? Well, it's right now. It's in your own generation you can serve and no others. Sometimes we get so upset by things that happened before we were even born, or so worried and anxious about things that may take place long after we're gone, that we lose sight of the fact we've got some things to do right now where we are, when we are. And all God expects of us, and underscore this in your mind, all God expects of us is to do the best we can for Him while we're here. That's it. It's not any of our jobs to undo or make up for the sins of others in the past or to go forward in the future with what may or may not be in those years to come. We must do what we can do now, right now, whenever we are and wherever we are and with whatever God has blessed us with by way of abilities and opportunities. And there's a song I'd like us to sing along this line. It's number 570. And basses, I'm going to need you to really come through on this one. 570. And before we sing, I want you to notice the refrain begins by saying, life's evening sun is sinking low. A few more days and I must go. You think that's kind of a somber way to look at things? But in the context of the song and the message that's been doing its best to get across to us is the idea, as we're saying, we're serving our own generation. That time will be soon past us, which means we must be doubling our efforts now to do what we can with the time that we have. Several of you today have been so kind to wish me a very happy birthday. I appreciate that. Thank you very much for that. But I've realized some things the last few years that maybe you've already realized. And that is, a person only has so many birthdays. Even Methuselah, he only had so many birthdays. It's just a matter of the number. The fact is, you only have so many of them. And it behooves us to do what we can with the ones we have. Let's sing together 570. Each day I'll do a golden deed by helping those who are in need. My life on earth is but a span, and so I'll do the best I can. Life's evening sun is sinking low. A few more days, and I must go to meet the deeds that I have done, where there will be no setting sun. to be a child of God each day. My life must shine along the way. I'll sing His praise while ages roll, and strive to help some troubled soul. Life's evening sun is sinking low, a few more days, and I must go to meet the deeds that I have done, where there will be no setting sun. The only life that will endure is one that's kind and good and pure. And so for God I'll take my stand. Each day I'll lend a helping hand. Life's evening sun is sinking low, a few more days, and I must go to meet the deeds that I have done, where there will be no setting sun. While going down life's weary road, I'll try to lift some traveler's load. I'll try to turn the night to day, make flowers bloom along the way. Life's evening sun is sinking low, a few more days, and I must go to meet the deeds that I have done, where there will be no setting sun. And now turn to John chapter 9. We'll find there that before Paul had said this about David and his generation, Christ had already said this, oddly enough, about his own time in the flesh. John chapter 9. We'll begin at verse number 1. Now as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him. I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." Now, this is a little trickier than David. In fact, one of the points that Paul is making about David in Acts 13, the same one that Peter had made about him in Acts 2, using the same scripture, was that David died, his body is still here. His body saw corruption. Jesus died, his body is no longer here. He has been raised from the dead and now ascended back to heaven. And so Jesus lives on. David still exists, yes. But the influence of Jesus, beyond his influence, his work for us on the very right hand of God's throne, serving as our advocate, our intercessor in a special way. This is something we can't put on the ledger for anyone else to be able to do. He's unique, Jesus is. But even that being the case, there is a sense for Christ being limited in some things in his own flesh for the time he was here. And that's what he's talking about right in the text we're reading. How many miracles did Jesus himself do after he ascended back to heaven? Well, not a one. Miracles were done. There were spiritual gifts in the church. The apostles were involved in them. But Jesus, he had gone back to heaven. How many miracles were done by Jesus back during the days of Malachi or Zephaniah or Isaiah or Elijah? And you say, well, he hadn't come to this earth yet. And so when were the miracles of Jesus done? During the time that he was with us. What examples of Christ do we follow that he showed us these examples after he ascended back to heaven? Well, none, because we have no examples of his behavior to follow except for those during his time here in the flesh. There is even a sense for Jesus Christ as God's own Son that in that sense he served his own generation. Now, I mention it's a little trickier than that because he still serves us today in a very real sense. But there are some things, as we've just seen, that were confined to that time when he was here among us in the flesh. And he realizes that. He says, I must work the works of him who sent me while it's day, while I'm still here, while I have opportunity, while I have life, before I am crucified. The night comes when, and this is what affects you and me, the night comes when no man can work. And what do you plan to accomplish after you're gone? I'm not sure I've ever thought about that question. What do we plan to accomplish after we're gone? Now, we'll have life after we're gone. The Bible teaches that. The soul never dies. We sing that song often. But what good do you plan to accomplish on this earth after you're gone? Well, you'll say, Brother Keith, that's as silly a question as the earlier ones, because I can't. We can't. It's impossible. But that's the whole point. The only time we have for doing the good we can do is while we're here. Now, in the realm of influence and the ripple effect of our example going forward, hopefully we can have some seed that we've planted that can take root later on. But in terms of our actual work, those things we have control over, those things are confined to this time we have in the flesh, which begs the question, how much time we have left? I can tell you exactly how much time's gone by so far. It's the time of your birth and then the time of your being able to do things until the time of today. But I can't answer the question how much time you have left, because none of us knows the answer to that question. It could be a long time, it could be a short time, it could be almost no time. We have no idea. And so when is the time for doing what we know we ought to do? Whether it's send that card or talk to that friend or encourage that Christian brother or sister, say that kind word, offer that forgiveness. I'll get around to it. I'll do it sometime. Well, that sometime may never come, because when the night comes, well, look at Jesus' words here. The night comes when no man can work. Turn to 594 as we close this out, and we'll sing a song that encapsulates the idea of all of what we've been talking about. 594. And once again, I'll direct your minds to a few words from the song. We find them when we get to verse number 3. Live for Jesus in life's morning. At the noontide hour be his. And at eve when day is turning. And inherit endless bliss. Well, what happens after Eve? Well, I think you can figure that out. what happened before the morning. Well, it didn't affect you because you weren't here. You've got the morning, you've got the noontime, you've got the eve, and that's about it. And you might be thinking along that chart of the example of words that the lyricist uses here. Well, am I in the morning or am I in the noontime? Maybe I'm in the evening. And you might be thinking, I'm getting pretty close to midnight. Well, the whole idea is regardless of when you're living. Now, Solomon does say, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Well, that's a good idea if you're in your youth. If you passed your youth, you start where you are because you can't go back to what you were. Start where you are and move forward to whatever comes next. And what do? You live not for self. You live for Jesus. Let's sing 594. Live for Jesus, oh my brother, His disciple ever be. Render not to any other what alone the Lord should be. Live for Jesus, live for Jesus, give Him all thou hast to give. On the cross the world's Redeemer gave His life that thou mightst live. Live for Jesus, wandering sinner, under Satan serve no more. Of the promised prize a winner, thou mayst be when life is o'er. Live for Jesus, live for Jesus, give Him all thou hast to give. On the cross the world's Redeemer gave His life that thou mightst live. Live for Jesus in life's morning, at the noontide hour be His. And at eve when day is turning, and inherit endless bliss. Live for Jesus, live for Jesus, give Him all thou hast to give. On the cross the world's Redeemer gave His life that thou mightst live. Before we close this evening, there have been some who've noticed the last several months what we're doing on our Sunday evenings. And if you've thought, well, we've been through that, we'll move to the next. Well, this basically, from my perspective, is the next. I've thought it a good idea. And if you wonder, why are you doing things this way? Well, we have good song services otherwise. I'm not trying to disparage or take away from the regular song service, but the number one purpose why I'm doing this is to make us aware of what the songs we sing mean. And to, outside of just these lessons, but in our entire singing, to begin singing with the spirit and the understanding, as Paul said, to actually consider the words that we're expressing in song. So often we are caught by a melody or a tempo and we like the way a song feels, never really considering the words we're saying. And the reason we have songs is not because of the tune. It's not because of the tempo. It's because of the message. Paul encourages us to use songs and hymns and spiritual songs to edify, to admonish one another, and to teach one another. Well, you can't do that if you're not paying attention to the very words you're singing. And so that's what we're attempting to do in these Sunday evening lessons, is to show how these songs fit into and grow out of very passages and principles of Scripture that ought to imbue our thinking and completely become a part of who we are. And so if we even come close to a measure of a modicum of to a bit of that in any of our thinking, to me this will have been a success. But I appreciate you indulging me in this as you have, and we'll move forward from this from sometime in the future, Lord willing. If you're with us tonight and you're outside of Christ, or you've left the Lord and need to come back to Him, there's no better time than now. We've just seen that the time for doing what needs to be done is not tomorrow. It's today. It's not later. It's right now. And if you need to come, come now as together we stand and sing.